Does everybody have a copy of the overview of Libertas? Or do we have a copy of Libertas as well? Now, this question is honestly a little difficult to disentangle. It's actually in itself pretty clear, but it is nevertheless difficult to disentangle. There's a Catholic view of liberty, and there's a Masonic view of liberty. The Masonic view of liberty is definitely Thomas Jefferson, and the general American view of liberty is liberal Jeffersonian, and it isn't Catholic. It's a view which is not so much thought. Because the moment you stop and think, you can see that it's wrong. But it's a view that's felt. I feel that liberty is wonderful, it's an ideal, and anybody who puts any constraint upon me is limiting me and limiting my humanity and cutting me down as a man, and I need to be free. That's a feeling, really. It's not an argument, it's a feeling. And it's centered on man. If man is an end in himself, then, you know, then it's right that he should be able to do anything he wants. But if man has an end outside of himself, then what he should and shouldn't do depends upon that end. If I do something which is going to wreck my reaching that end, I better not do it. I better not be free to do it. I better be free only for those things that are going to help me to get that end. So the two views of liberty, the Masonic view of liberty and the Catholic view of liberty, once more come back down to, is man the end of himself, the purpose, the goal, the end of himself? In that case, you have one view of liberty. Or is God the end of man? And in that case, you have another view of liberty. So the question of liberty, you are only going to sort out if you sort out, firstly, whether man is his own end. If you believe that man is his own end, there's no way that you're going to buy the Catholic view of liberty. If man is his own end, there's no limits at all upon what you should be able to do. On the other hand, if God is man's end, if man has an end outside himself, if he's in this life only in order to go to God, then the liberty that man has is aiming at God. In that case, the liberty should be free to do everything that will take him to God, but should not be free for anything that will take him away from God. Let's take an example. See if I can do it with a comparison. We'll come to this in a few moments. But let's take a 747. One of those that just crashed last night. A 747. Here's the 747. Big plane. Wings. Nose, tail, and so on. I'm not really an artist, is it?
Is that a fish?
I'm not really an artist. That's a 747. Now, you look at a 747 and you say to yourself, is the 747 an end in itself? Or is its end flying across the Atlantic? Is its end flying? If it's an end in itself, does it ever need to take off? If it's an end in itself, does it ever need to take off? Could you happily burn it on the airport if it's an end in itself? Could you put it on a stand? Could you go plate it? Could you cover it with moss? If it's an end in itself, you could do absolutely anything with it, correct? If it's its own end. On the other hand, if its end is outside itself, if its end is outside itself, namely flying, then what follows? That in order to achieve its end, It's got to be, it's got to have, it's, it, the end is going to govern what is good and what is not good for it. If it is the, if it is its own measure of its end, then it can do what it likes, but it'll never take off. For instance, if I cover it with moss, it's never going to take off. Or if I gold plate it, it may not take off. Or if I take out, two of the engine pods, it'll never take off. There's all, if it's an end in itself, I can do all kinds of things with it, but it's not going to be able to take off with easily most of the things that I do. On the other hand, if it's going to be, if its end is outside it, then, what is good or not good is going to be governed by that end. And if, for this elephant to fly, it's got to obey a very large number of rules. Right? In other words, in order to be free to fly, it's got to do without a whole lot of other freedoms. In order to achieve the freedom to fly, in order to achieve its end, it's got to do without all kinds. The pilot sits down in the cockpit at the beginning of a flight, and he goes all over the panels. He's checking one thing after another, after another, after another. And if one light shows wrong, he says, "Sorry, folks, we're going to have to wait a moment until the airport engineers come and replace this piece. I do hope you won't be too... thank you for your cooperation." The usual spiel. If the airplane wants to be free to fly, if its end is outside itself, then it's got to obey what that end requires. And that end, flying safely over the Atlantic, requires a stack of rules to be obeyed. And there's all kinds of things that the 747 is no longer free to do if it wants to achieve its end. Now, if its end is itself, it need never take off. In that case, you can do what you like with it. You can make it a little castle. You can build sandcastles all over it. You can put the local shopping mall in it. You can do anything you like with it, as long as it is sacred in itself. If it's sacred in itself, you can do anything you like, but it's not going to take off. But if its end is to take off, then there's not anything you can do with it. You've got a very, very strict parameters within which to work. So, the liberty to fly means a great deal of constraint. And if you insist upon liberty for the 747 in itself, it's not going to have liberty to fly. So is the 747 to fly or not? If it is, it's going to be very, very strictly controlled in order to fly. If it isn't to fly, you can do what you like with it. You can go and take some aluminum pieces off and put them on the garden shed. You can drape lead all over the tail. You can give the whole plane a lead coating to keep it from blowing away. There's a thousand things you can do with it. So the whole question, the question of what is liberty for the 747, is determined by, is the 747 an end in itself, or is the 747, is the 747 end outside? That's the question. If it's an end in itself, then it doesn't need to fly, and you can do anything you like, absolutely anything you like. If its end is outside it, in order to do that flying, it's going to have to obey a lot of very strict rules. And if you arrive at the airport and somebody says to you, "This 747 that you're about to climb into has got liberty." Oh? It's got liberty from all of the rules of aeronautics. Oh? We have declared independence from having to obey the rules of flying. Oh? Are you proposing to take off in that? Oh, yes. Well, thanks very much. I'll go and find an aeroplane that's strictly doing without all kinds of liberty, because I want to get in one piece over the other side of the Atlantic. Yeah? The purpose, is the 7-7 a purpose in itself, or is it a purpose outside it? Now you take man. You take man now. He sort of stands this way. Is man's end outside him, or is man an end in himself? According to According to whether man is an end in himself or man's end is outside him, you've got two very different ideas of liberty. If man is an end in himself, he can do what he likes, and that's what the Freemasons say. Anything, absolutely anything he likes. On the other hand, if man's end is outside him, then man has got, like the 747, he's got to obey certain rules in order to fly to that end, to get to that end. So what is the nature of man? Now, what do most men today feel about man? Do men today feel that their end is outside them, or do men today feel that man is the end, purpose, and glory of creation? Stephen?
Himself.
Yes. And that's why you get the modern view of liberty. See, Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, arrived 200 years after Protestantism. And Protestantism has been fighting Catholicism, and so people say, I don't know what the truth is. Why in the 10,000 years of, in the 1,000 years of Christendom, everybody knew that man's end was outside him, because everybody agreed, the Catholic Church, nobody was seriously arguing with the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church taught that the purpose of man is only to live in this valley of tears in order to go to heaven, and that when he dies, he's got to fly to heaven. In other words, when he dies, the plane has got to be in shape to take off for heaven, otherwise it's going to crash into hell. So this life is simply a preparation for that moment of death when we're going to take off, and the plane had better be in good shape, just like the 747 always has to be in good shape as they rev up the engines to take off. It has to be, otherwise it's going to crash. So as long as the Catholic Church was teaching that, there was no problem. But when the Protestants came along and started arguing with that, after 200 years of the Catholic Church being disputed, a Thomas Jefferson comes along and says, I don't know. Hey, the priests and the ministers themselves don't know. They're all arguing with one another. Who knows what the truth is? There isn't a truth. Who knows what the truth is? Can we get to the truth? What I do know is that, you know, I'm a man and I'm valuable. So to blazes with this idea of any end outside, we'd better settle for making an end out of ourselves. So if I knew, Thomas Jefferson might have said, if I knew that I had to take off for heaven when I died, and that there were certain rules for being in shape in order to take off when I die, well, I'm sure I'd settle for those rules, but I don't know that. The church and themselves are arguing about it. So in the meantime, what I do know is that I have a life to live here on this earth, and I'm going to make it as comfortable as I can. So in order to make it comfortable, what we'll do is we'll give freedom for everybody to express their opinion. There isn't a truth, so the best thing we can do is let everybody say what they think. And that's Jeffersonian freedom of the press. And it follows, if there's no true religion, or if people can't get to the true religion, if people can't find out what man really is for, if it's unknowable what man is for, then Jeffersonian liberty is the next best. Hey guys, at least I'm here, and I don't know about any other end, but I'm an end of some kind, so we'll settle for me being an end. So look, let's make this life as comfortable as we can, and give as much liberty to as many people as we can, because why should we limit it? And that's the modern system. We don't know about God, we don't know about the end, we do know about man. Man is a fairly glorious creature, he's naughty about all the time, but let's make things as free and nice for man as we can on this earth and in this life, and that's modern liberty. The Catholics say, no way for that. The Catholics say, look, God took flesh once, only once, he founded a church, that church has taught us absolutely clear, uncontestable rules. Any man who wants to know this truth can know it. God could not have made this truth inaccessible for anybody who wanted to get to it. For anybody who wants to get to it, it is there, it is reachable, it is knowable. That truth is as clear can be. We have got to be in shape for the moment of takeoff, and we've got to obey the Ten Commandments, and this is exactly what we have to do. These are all the cockpit rules that we have to obey if we want to get to heaven. If we want to be free to fly in the fields of paradise for eternity, if we want the real freedom, we'd better limit our freedom in this life. Jefferson says, I don't know about any pie in the sky, about any paradise, about any possibility later. If you want to believe in that, that's fine by you, but I don't know about it, and Joe doesn't know about it. So look, let's just organize society so that everybody can do what they like. And that's modern liberty. So, the question of liberty is essentially a secondary question. The first question is, what is man? Does God? The first question is always, does God exist? That's always the first question. Second question, has God told us what we need to do by the time we die? If he exists and he hasn't told us, then we can do what we like. But if he exists and if he has told us, we'd better do it if we want to go to heaven. He's left us the liberty to go to hell if we want. But if you want to go to heaven, then it's clear what we have to do. And I'm not at liberty to go to hell if I do everything that will prepare me to go to heaven. And I'm not at liberty to go to heaven if I do everything to prepare me to go to hell. In other words, I can choose which way I want, but I can't choose that will lead here or that will lead here. If between this and this, if I choose this, it's going to lead there. And if I choose that, it's going to lead there. In other words, the geography I can't change. I'm not at liberty to change the geography. Which way I go in the geography, I'm at liberty. But the basic ground plan is not under my control. It's God who's laid it all down. So there's Jefferson. And Jefferson, compared with the modern liberty merchants, is an angel. The modern liberty merchant is, I am God. Make no mistake. Jefferson was still, you say, I'm not sure, you know, I mean, I really don't know, so look, let's look after number one. But the moderns are, I am number one. Of course, Jefferson is not far from that, but I think you can say he's not yet there. And in that sense, he's a bit of an angel compared with those who have got there. Right, now let's have a look at this plan, which I think, again, will help us. Liberty, I said, it's basically a secondary question. And it depends upon who you think man is, who you think, or whether you think God is, and what man is here for. Those are the primary questions. And liberty simply follows on those questions. In any case, what is liberty? Liberty is the absence of constraint. The lack of anything forcing me to do X or Y or Z. It divides into, firstly, the physical liberty and natural liberty. Physical liberty is the absence of external constraint. For instance, a cage, e.g. cage, or prison, chains, cage, chains. For instance, a bird. If a bird is not in a cage, and if there's no thread tied to a bird's foot, then a bird has physical liberty, because it's not being externally constrained. You and I have physical liberty because none of us are wearing handcuffs, none of us in prison, there are no locked doors, there's no force of any kind being of external material, physical force. Therefore, all of us here obviously have, right here and now, physical liberty. If any of us was thrown into prison, we would no longer have physical liberty. If anyone was put in handcuffs, we would no longer have physical liberty. So physical liberty is a very simple affair. It's not difficult to understand. Right. It's different from natural liberty, which is the absence of internal constraint. For instance, instincts. And natural liberty is the same thing as free will. Now, the bird, if it's not in a cage, has got physical liberty. But no bird has got free will. Because no bird is free from internal constraint. Every bird, like every other animal, is constrained by its instincts. Every bird is limited and controlled by its instincts. Every dog is limited and controlled by its instincts. Every horse is limited and controlled by its instincts. The horse, if it's out in the meadow and is free, or if out on the plain, it's got physical liberty. But it hasn't got natural liberty, because the horse will always do exactly what its instincts tell it. You see a dog coming up to the edge of a cold stream, and on the other side is a plate of red meat. You can see the dog coming up and then going back. Coming up because of the red meat, going back because of the cold water. The two instincts are fighting one another. Do you think the dog has free will to choose between which of those instincts will prevail? No, it doesn't. The instincts fight one another, but that's not free will. Because in the end, whichever instinct is stronger, the coldness of the water or the lusciousness of the red meat, one of those instincts will prevail over the other, and either the dog will swim across the water and get the meat, or it will walk away. But it's just a battle of instincts. It's not free will. Because the dog is controlled by its instincts, and the instincts simply fight one another until one prevails. But the a human being who's not drunk and who's not asleep and who's reached the age of reason, he has got free will. He's got a faculty which can override his instincts and determine which way the instincts go, whether to go with this instinct or whether to go with that instinct. The human being is the human being who's got reason is not constrained internally. If he's not constrained externally, he may not be constrained internally either. And it's implanted in man's nature. It's in man's nature. Man is a rational animal, therefore it's in man's nature to have free will. It's in the birds and the animals' nature not to have free will. It's in man's nature, because he has reason, to have free will. The Masons, the Freemasons, absolutely confuse that. Because the Freemasons want us all to believe that we're animals, or we're no better and no different from animals, because if we're no better and no different from animals, we will behave like animals. If we will behave like animals, then they could herd us all over the place like animals, which is what they want. The sheep of the Antichrist, that's what they want. So the Masons blur this all the time, and you keep seeing television programs about how the animals are just like human beings. For instance, we're shown a picture of an aquarium in Florida, and somebody in a white coat, a scientist in a white coat with big spectacles, comes on and says, "Folks, today we're going to listen to a conversation between Mr. Dolphin and Mrs. Dolphin. We've got tremendous listening equipment, and they've got a, you know, computer all over the place, and dials and buzzes and flashing lights. And the cameras on all of this, and, you know, it all looks very, very serious. And so, okay now, folks, we're going to listen." Do you know, that was Mr. Dolphin talking to Mrs. Dolphin, and Mr. Dolphin was saying, "Good morning." That was Mrs. Dolphin talking to Mr. Dolphin, and Mrs. Dolphin saying, "Get lost." You get television programs on this level. They are the levels that... There is no way that the dolphins can talk like human beings or indulge in the exchange of reason between root. It's nothing of the kind. Of course, animals make noises to one another, expressing their instincts, but that's totally different from the conversation between two human beings with reason. Totally different. But the Freemasons and the television are constantly pretending that there's no real difference. And they take the most reasonable looking behavior of animals in order to try to prove that the animals have got reason, or that they take the most beastly behavior of human beings in order to prove that human beings haven't got reason. In any case, the Freemasons do everything to try to knock out that line, to knock out the difference between living beings that are internally constrained and living beings that are not internally constrained. But that then, so this is physical liberty, and this is free will, and the two things are quite different. It's common sense that they're quite different. The bird out in the fields has got physical liberty, it hasn't got free will. The bird in the cage has got no physical liberty, and it's got no free will. The human being in a cage has still got free will, but he's lost his physical liberty. The human being out in the fields has got both free will and physical liberty. So you can find something which has got this and not that, that and not this, neither that nor this, both that and this. The two liberties are quite clearly very different. Okay. So the absence of internal constraint, for instance, by instinct. Sometimes men's instincts can get very, very strong. In France, they've got, if a man kills his wife, there is a defense of, I forget what they call it, crime passionnel. The instinct was just too strong, and therefore it's, you know, the guilt is diminished if he murders his wife. You know, if he did it out of just a wild passion, because as the passion gets absolutely wild, so the reason is diminished. Catholic theology considers that. Catholic theology examines how far, if at all, free will is taken away in men by instincts. For instance, fear. Is a man responsible if somebody puts a gun to his head and he signs his name? And Catholic theology says, yes, he is still responsible. Obviously, it diminishes his... But I don't... If somebody puts a gun to my head, I do not have to write a right to sign... to give a signature which is a mortal sin. And I'm not excused from mortal sin. It, obviously, I'm partly excused, but I'm still responsible if I... Even with a gun... So, the question of... instincts and passions against free will is considered by moral theology, but human beings are quite different from animals. So that's the difference between free will and physical liberty. Now, so that's the difference between one and two. We want now natural liberty is like the Boeing 747 doing whatever it wants. Let's say you can cover it with moss, you can give it a coating of lead, you can strip the aluminum, you can make it into a shopping mall. Natural liberty means man's faculty to use his free will for anything he wants, absolutely anything he wants. That's natural liberty is wide open. It's just the faculty of free will. But now, natural liberty divides. Natural liberty, the birds don't get into questions of morality because they've got no reason. The only creatures that get into questions of morality are creatures that have got reason. Therefore, the question of when I've got reason, which is free will, which goes with free will, or which free will goes with, when I've got a being that has reason, we're stepping into the domain of morality. I can make a good use of my free will, or I can make an evil use of my free will. If I make a good use of my free will, that's what we call moral liberty. If I make a bad use of my free will, that is what we might call immoral liberty or license. If I choose sin, then that's license or licentiousness. If I choose anything virtuous, that's moral liberty. Now, for man to go to his end, which is God, man will need moral liberty. He will need to exercise his moral liberty. If man has an end outside himself, if that end is God, and if God requires that I do what is morally good in order to reach Him, then a man has got moral liberty, a man must use his moral liberty to do what's good and to attain his end. And if he has an end and refuses to do what's good, he will be punished for it. On the other hand, if man is an end in himself, then which liberty counts? If man is an end in himself, is there any difference between moral liberty and license? If man is his own end? David?
No, there's no difference.
There's no difference. Because there's no end, there's nobody out here telling me what's good or evil. I can do whatever I like. So the liberty of the man who's an end in himself is natural liberty. There's no difference between, if you suppress God, who, as the end of man, who distinguishes between good and evil, and who tells me to do good and not to do evil, if you suppress all of that, then this just gets wiped out. There's no difference here. The difference between moral liberty and license is the difference between good and evil. If the difference between good and evil is wiped out, then all that you've got left is natural liberty. So, if the Freemasons deny the existence of God, or deny the importance of God, if they deny that there's a difference between good and evil, then the only liberty that's left is natural liberty, and I can do what I like. I have natural liberty, and I can use it how I like. On the other hand, if man has an end outside himself, if he must do what is good in order to achieve that end, then he must make the right use of his natural liberty, which means he must confine his choices to moral liberty. He can choose between one good thing and another. He can choose between all of the good things. But he can't choose between what's evil, because that will take him away from God, and that means that he will crash. He will crash when it comes to taking off from the airport. Let us have a look now at Leo the 13th. The word liberty has got these three meanings. Physical liberty, natural liberty, and moral liberty. And you need to be clearly distinguished between the three. The grandeur of liberty. Liberty, man's highest natural gift. What do you think that is? Which liberty do you think that is? Tony?
Natural.
Right. Free will. Free will, exactly. Free will, man's highest natural gift, is assisted by the Redeemer. Assisted by the Redeemer in order to become moral liberty, right? The Redeemer helps us make the right use of our natural liberty in order that we use it in a moral liberty, choosing only what's good. Natural liberty, man's highest natural liberty, is assisted by the Redeemer and is cherished by the Church. The Church defends free will. Why does the Church do it? Who attacks free will? Calvin, right. The Protestants are liable to deny that free will exists. Who else denies that free will exists in modern times? Yes, yes, definitely. Modern psychology denies free will. It says that we are the victims of our environment and or our instincts. Freud, we are pushed around by the id and the ego and whatever it is, and we don't have free will. Modern psychology tells us that we don't have free will. What's the advantage of not having free will?
Accountability.
I don't have to answer to anybody for what I do. If I don't have free will, I can go down to the bar every night and enjoy myself.
It's society's fault.
Exactly. It's society's fault. That's right. So people like not having free will, which is why every now and again you get somebody who tells us that we don't have free will, but we do. So the Church, on the other hand, defends free will against the liars that say we don't have it. So free will is assisted by the Redeemer and it's cherished by the Church. But vitiated or false modern notions of liberty require from us a special encyclical. In what does the essential modern error about liberty consist? After all that I've said, in what does the essential, Doctor? That there's no difference between good and evil. That there's no God. That there's no end outside man, and that there's no good and evil laid down there's nothing outside of man which is the measure of his actions and which imposes upon him to do what's good and not to do what's evil. That's what is the heart of the modern idea of liberty. Man is his own God. Man is his own measure of what's right and wrong. That's what people think today. And if the people decide that abortion is okay, and if the people makes a law, if we the people make a law that abortion is okay, hey, then abortion is okay. Right. All right. Notice then, 3 to 13, he lays out true liberty. 15 to 35, he lays out false liberty. Now, often we see in these encyclicals, you will notice, if you look, notice the way they're laid out, quite often the error is first laid out and then the truth is laid out afterwards. In this one, he lays out the truth first and then lays out the error afterwards. Why does anybody think he lays out the truth first this time?
Probably because you have to establish it, understand it like he
did. It's a difficult question. There's much confusion, and so he lays out the truth before going into the errors. That's surely why he has to lay out that it's so confusing. And Vatican II put out a document which is swimming in that confusion, called Dignitatis Humanae, on religious liberty. And it's the same basic confusion. If man is God or God is God, that's the basic question. And people today think that man is God, so Vatican II said, in order to adapt to the modern mentality, the Church must adapt the man is God view of liberty. The Church must take over and make her own the man is God idea of liberty. In other words, natural liberty is the same thing as moral liberty. Moral liberty and license just disappear into natural liberty, and man has a right to do anything he likes. It's insane, but that really is what the Vatican II ultimately teaches. Right, now, you can see 3-4, he goes into natural liberty, and then 5-13, he goes into moral liberty, and that's exactly this distinction, natural liberty, moral liberty. And firstly 3-4, natural, or it's sometimes called psychological liberty, that's another name for it, but it's exactly the same thing, meaning free will, which is the base of all liberties. Because if man doesn't have this faculty, then there's no way in which he can use or apply whatever. This is the fundamental faculty, without which there's no other possibility of any freedom of choice on the part of men. Therefore, he's saying this is the fundamental, the base of all liberty, is based on man's rational nature. It's because man has reason that he has free will. That's a very interesting question. But to listen to the Masons, free will is the glory and characteristic of men. To listen to the Catholics, reason is the glory and characteristic of men. And from reason follows free will. I wish we had time to go into it because it is a very interesting question, because it already puts a lot of ideas straight to realize that liberty is not the be-all and end-all of man. Liberty is simply a spin-off from man's having reason. It's creatures of reason that all have liberty. No creature can have liberty unless it has reason. Every creature that has reason has liberty. Liberty is secondary once more. What's primary is reason. But of course, why do the Freemasons say that liberty, why do the Freemasons put liberty above reason? Because if man has reason, you might immediately think, well, in that case, man ought to do what is reasonable. Exactly, you see. The moment you start talking about things being reasonable or unreasonable, you're immediately suggesting that there's something outside of man controlling him. And the Masons don't want that. I am king. Man is king. Therefore, they don't start from reason. They start from liberty. I am liberty. And that is their basic principle, and everything else they make follow from that, because they want to make man into God. So, and modern men feel that they are God. And so the poor old Catholic Church, the churchmen of Vatican II, facing modern man, who feels that he's God, instead of saying, hey, you guys, you got it completely wrong, go jump in the lake. Instead of telling modern man where to get off, the modern church said, oh, modern man, you're wonderful. So we'll all now, too, adopt the idea that man is God and that liberty is the basis of everything. And the first two words of that document are dignitatis humani, of human dignity. See? And if you start out from human dignity, well, then, of course, man is going to be the measure of everything. But if you start out from divine dignitatis, of divine dignity, then God is going to be the measure, and in that case man is going to have to make the right use of his liberty. Man is going to have somebody outside him telling him what he has to do, and man will have to obey. Oh, the Masons don't want that. So, 4. Free will is based on man's rational nature, and not reason based on liberty, but liberty is based on reason. The immortal soul's natural liberty or free will, the church has defended against all comers. So, there we are. Natural liberty is that faculty of free will built into every reasonable nature, built therefore into man's nature, which is the basis of all other liberties, and without which any other liberty is inconceivable. So, that's like the raw material. That is the... Is this material, raw material of liberty, just glorious, or is it glorious and dangerous? Is this faculty of free will for man, such as Catholic, that we Catholics know man to be, is it glorious, just glorious, or is it glorious and dangerous? David? For the Masons, what is it? Just glorious, that's it. You're getting the idea. For the Masons, this faculty is just glorious because man can use it how he likes. But for the Catholics, this faculty is glorious, but it's also dangerous. Because this life is full of tears and it's also full of dangers, and many men go to hell. They make the wrong use of the faculty, and therefore they finish up in hell. There are many, many temptations. The world, the flesh, and the devil push us to make the wrong use of this glorious faculty. And if we make the wrong use of the glorious faculty, then we get a glorious punishment, which lasts for eternity, down below. All right, now let's look at moral liberty.
But it is great and all that.
It's all, yeah, no central heating bills down there. That's true. Now, he lays out 5 to 11 the doctrine, and then 12 to 13 what the church What he's going to teach about moral liberty is quite simple. Basically what he's going to say is that, he's going to say, man has an end. In order to achieve that end, he's got to obey certain rules, just like the 747, in order to be able to fly across the Atlantic, he's got to obey certain rules. And in fact, the liberty to fly requires rules. So man has an end. The liberty to achieve that end requires rules. If you want to fly a 747, you've got to take care of avoiding a whole lot of things. For instance, hammerhead clouds. You know, the hammerhead clouds are very dangerous, apparently, because there's a powerful upcurrent. It can throw planes all over the place. So if you want to fly safely, you've got to avoid hammerhead clouds. There's all kinds of rules that you have to obey. Rules of aeronautics, rules of weather. That's simply what he's saying here. Man, in fact, has to cross the Atlantic. Man has a maker, man has a creator, who's created him for heaven. He has an end outside himself. To achieve that end, he's got to obey certain rules. Therefore, in order to be free to achieve that end, for his real liberty, he needs rules. Now, it sounds funny to say that liberty needs rules, but what it means is that moral liberty is the purpose of natural liberty. And in order to get from moral, natural liberty to moral liberty, I need some rules to guide me in order to make sure that I arrive at moral liberty. To keep me away from using natural liberty for license. So, it's a little technically laid out, but what he's arguing is that liberty is a faculty of beings that can choose by intelligence and will. In other words, you find liberty, you find liberty where you have reason. Now, 6, erring human intelligence and wayward will, because men are naughty, they have errors in their heads and they have naughtiness in their hearts. Men, erring human beings, can easily wreck their choice. The 747 can easily hit the wrong kind of cloud or be mechanically unprepared. And therefore, before you take off, you need a checklist where you've got to check every piece of equipment on the 747 to make sure that the slats are working, to make sure that the ailerons are working, to make sure that the fin is working, to make sure the landing gear is working. You've got to check every one of those things before you take off. You need a whole lot of rules if the plane is going to be free to fly. If the plane doesn't have to fly, you can do what you like. But if the plane does have to fly, you have to obey a stack of rules. So, erring human intelligence is the way we will can wreck their choice, and therefore the conclusion of 5 and 6 is that human liberty, in order to avoid a wreck, requires direction. In order for the faculty to achieve what it's meant to achieve, it must be guided away by rules from achieving what it's not meant to achieve. It needs rules to bring it to its purpose. Assuming that there is a purpose. If there isn't a purpose, then that's all wiped out and all we have is this and we can do what we like. Right? Then, in the individual, that's the main argument. 5, 6, 7 is the main argument of the whole of the encyclical. The center of gravity is 5, 6, 7, you could say. 8, 9, he's simply spelling out what kind of law we're talking about. Human liberty requires law. This wide open faculty needs guide rails to make sure that it gets to its end. Otherwise, it's going to make a wreck. So we all of us need rules to get us to our end. We need the Ten Commandments, notably. If we obey the Ten Commandments, we will go to heaven. If we don't obey the Ten Commandments, we will go to hell. So we need those Ten Commandments. We need rules to make sure that we achieve the purpose of our glorious but dangerous faculty. Otherwise, the dangerous faculty risks hitting the danger and blowing up. Right. In the individual, there's natural law, which is the implant of God's eternal law, which is held by God's grace. That's in the individual. In society, there is human law, which is enacting or supporting God's eternal law. So, therefore, true human liberty lies in conforming with God's eternal law. So, what he's saying there is, 5, 6, 7, the natural faculty requires law in order to fly across the Atlantic, get to heaven. 8:9, that law is in any case, whether it's individual or social, in any case, it's God's law. The conclusion then is, natural liberty, in order to achieve its purpose, requires God's law. Now you go to Thomas Jefferson and tell him, liberty requires the law of God. Imagine, what do you think Thomas Jefferson would have said? He would have blown a raspberry. You telling me that my liberty requires law from God? I am the judge of God's law. If I think that the Ten Commandments are going to make me happy, fine. I will choose to obey God's law. That's Jefferson. But if I think that the Ten Commandments are not going to make me happy, I'm not going to choose them. And I have a right. That's Jefferson. And Jefferson is ultimately, man is God and not God is God. That's the bottom line. So, in the individual, if we're talking about law in the individual, it's an implant of God's law. If we're talking about law in society, it's the human law which is enacting or supporting God's natural law, and therefore, in any case, 10, true human liberty, the liberty to fly across the Atlantic, requires rules. Man's true liberty is not the liberty to sit on the airport and get covered with lead or moss. Man's true liberty is the liberty to get to heaven. That liberty to get to heaven requires laws, and it requires God's law. And therefore you arrive at this strange looking conclusion that liberty needs law. So, because God's authority, the authority of God, perfects and guides human liberty to the good which is its perfection. In other words, again, law, God's law, guides the glorious and dangerous faculty to achieve its purpose. The cockpit rules guide the 747 to fly over the Atlantic. The cockpit checklist enables the 747 to fly. The law of God enables man to fly to heaven. Otherwise he's going to crash into hell. Then briefly about the church. The church is the defender of liberty, 12, and the church is the protector of the people. The Masons, through the 19th century, were terrible. They were liars. They lie. The Freemasons are the father of this world of lies that we've got today. Of course, the real father is Satan, but the Masons are the instruments of Satan to make this world of lies which we've got all around us today. The Masons lie, and through the 19th century, they lied that the church is against liberty. The church is against saying that natural liberty is the final liberty, yes. But the church is for the faculty of liberty, because that is the basis of moral liberty, which is the means for man to get to heaven, which is his purpose and his eternal happiness. Therefore the church is not against natural liberty, but the church is against making natural liberty into the only liberty. That's what the church is against. But the Masons say, the church is against natural liberty. The church is against liberty. We defend liberty, the church is against liberty. See? And poor dumb modern men, you see, the moment you say liberty, most modern men, you know, it's like saying democracy. Liberty. Fascism. Yeah. People today don't think, they just have push-button minds. You push the right buttons and they all get gooey and feel good. You push the wrong buttons and they all start hissing and spitting. That's the way modern minds work. Sorry?
There is evil fascism.
Well, bring a black shirt. Yes, interesting. Yes, that's true. That's true. You could sort of say, I mean, we must use natural liberty in order to be liberals and not in order to be fascists. Yes, there is. Yes. Yes, that's true. We're at liberty for everything, everybody except for fascists. Except for fascists, colonialists, sexists, racialists. You know, yes, it's a new morality, a completely new morality. So, God's authority perfects and guides human liberty to the good which is the perfection of human liberty. That good, the landing in Europe is the perfection of the 747. Arriving at heaven is the perfection of all of man's faculties, of man's nature. So the law of God will help us to fulfill our nature. You try telling a Freemason that the law of God will help us to fulfill our nature. For a Freemason, The law of God is exactly the opposite of what helps us to fulfill our nature. For the Freemason, what we need in order to fulfill our nature is complete and perfect natural liberty. That's what they say. So, the Catholic Church has always been the incomparable defender of the right understanding of liberty. Because by tying authority to God, she ennobles true obedience and effectually bars tyranny. Notice that paragraph 13. By tying authority to God, by, for instance, the anointing of kings, when the Catholic Church ties authority to God, saying that all authority comes from God, what that naturally means is the people must obey. Therefore, she ennobles true obedience and she effectually bars tyranny. But if the king is tied to God, then the king has got to behave himself, as well as the people obeying. But by making authority a divine thing and not just a human thing, the church stops the king from oppressing the people and stops the people from revolting against the king. And if the king behaves himself, the people won't want to revolt. And if the people behave themselves, the king won't need to be cruel. So in a Catholic society, you get harmony from top to bottom because everybody is lined up on God. But if you take away God, then men do what they like. And if the aristocrats forget God, the middle class will get rid of them. And if the middle class put God back, the people will respect the middle class. But if the middle class don't put God back, if the middle class simply take all the privileges in order to enjoy themselves like fat cats, then the socialists will rise up against the middle class. And if the socialists then behave like idiots and barbarians, the Unabomber will rise up against the socialists and will send them bombs through the mail in order to destroy the socialists. It's completely logical from top to bottom. But the Catholic Church, by tying authority to God, by tying Henry VIII to the Church, it was Henry VIII's fault if he broke away. It wasn't the Catholic Church's fault. By tying Henry VIII to God, the Catholic Church would have protected and gone on protecting England. But the moment Henry VIII broke away from God, then it was simply a matter of time before his people turned on the king. And in 1649, the English cut off the head of their king, Charles I. And that was inevitable from the moment that Henry VIII broke away from God. When Henry VIII broke away from God, either the English people turned back to God or eventually they cut his head off. And that happened in 1649. So, by tying authority to God, the Catholic, read paragraph 13, read all of it. The Catholic Church ennobles true obedience because I'm no longer just obeying a man. If authority is from God, then by obeying authority, I'm not just obeying a man, I'm obeying the power that is from God. And so obedience becomes something much nobler than just obeying another man. Americans tend to think of obedience, this is Jefferson again, they will tend to think, why should I obey another man? Answer, if he's only another man, you've got a very good question. But if he is the carrier of the authority of God, then you must obey that man because he is the carrier of the authority of God. That's why. So, she ennobles true obedience and she effectually bars tyranny. The Catholic Church doesn't just tell the people to pay, pray, and shut up. The Catholic Church also tells the priests and the bishops to behave. And what does the Catholic Church do, or what does the Lord God do if the priests and bishops and popes don't behave? The Lord God abandons them, and then what? Then where are those bishops when the Lord God abandons them? They're nowhere. That's just like the official churchmen today. They lose the people's respect, they lose everything. They're losing their churches, they're losing the buildings, they're losing money, they're losing the paedophilia suits. I mean, they're losing it all. So God has his own ways of controlling the churchmen if the churchmen misbehave. But if the churchmen would turn back to God and obey God, everything would drop back into place. And the Catholics would immediately start obeying their churchmen again and listening to their churchmen. I always quote the example of the 1984 election here in the United States, when there was a member of the female sex, I won't even call her a woman, running as vice president of the Democrats. I won't think of naming the name of this creature.
Starts with an F.
I won't think of naming the name of this creature. I love you, remember. Cardinal O'Connor made one little statement. He said, I don't see how anybody can vote for somebody who's supported abortion. Wrong! All of the media, all over the country, absolutely up. The whole thing is like putting a match to a blazer. Because one cardinal, one Catholic churchman had for one moment expressed the truth. Immediately, it had a tremendous effect. If only the churchmen would tell the truth, they would immediately be listened to again. If they talk nonsense, they lose it. If they told the truth, they would get back all of their prestige and authority and power. It's as simple as that. So, notice 13. The Catholic Church... the Catholic Church is not an enemy of liberty. The Catholic Church is a friend of authority, but she's not an enemy of liberty. She's the friend of true liberty, of rightly used liberty. The Catholic Church absolutely defends the right use of liberty. The Catholic Church is against the wrong use of natural liberty. But the Catholic Church is not against natural liberty. The Catholic Church is all for natural liberty being rightly used and turned into moral liberty. But the Masons say that she's against natural liberty. The Masons lie, as usual. Well, take, as usual, an hour of time of your own, and then we will continue at 11.